Good afternoon. Thanks for making it after lunch. I know with a steak and potatoes lunch, it's hard to get yourself back to the conference center to listen to another hour and 15-minute speech. My name is Jay Shulman. I will be speaking on fishing with Asterix PBS. Just to talk to you a little bit about what we are going to talk about today, we're going to look at the background, the concept, what our fishing technique is, the tools it takes to do it, the basic monitoring techniques. We're going to build from that, and then we're going to talk about an advanced fishing PBX system, and then finally we're going to talk about the most important part is preventing this type of attack. Talk about the background. Why is this becoming a popular issue? First thing is phishing emails are becoming less and less effective. Every time I hear statistics, I actually hear that they're just as effective, but I have to believe that people are actually losing, are not clicking on the links, they're not following through on it. Regulatory changes make it a little bit harder to fish. We're going to talk about why that's, what the regulatory changes are, how that's affecting people. Fishers are becoming more creative. We'll talk about that. And of course, what's old is new. Everything here, everything I'm going to talk about today, there's really nothing new to it. It's really all about what is old has now become new again. Let's look at fishing to date. This is from May 2006. I was hoping to get the June statistics up, but they were not available as of yesterday. The key items to look at are the last two statistics. The average time online for a fishing site is 5 days. And the longest time online for a site is 31 days. Both of these numbers kind of surprised me. I don't know how they actually come up with the actual statistics, but 5 days actually seems a little bit long for an average, and the longest time, it's hard to believe that a fishing site is actually online for 31 days. The regulatory guidance, the FFIEC guidance on authentication and internet banking, this is one of the reasons why they're moving towards this type of phishing attack. You'll see here, I'm not going to read you the whole legislation, but the interesting part to note is the last sentence, other controls reasonably calculated to mitigate those risks. There's a broad spectrum of what banks can do. This is the Bank of America Passmark technology, Passmark being one of the most common technology used to comply with the FFIEC guidelines. The idea here is you enter in your username, you're going to notice a picture, and you'll respond to that individual picture that you picked, and there's a couple extra questions. This isn't to say that next year at Black Hat or DEF CON that we're going to actually have somebody come up here and talk about how to bypass or how to fish around the Passmark technology. But needless to say, people are looking for easy ways to fish. They're not looking to create complex things. The first VoIP phishing reported, the best that I can tell, comes back to about April 25th. Cloud Mark found it. It basically was a simple attack. They didn't have a lot of information about it. But I basically put about the April time frame of when the first real incident came out. Let's take a look at what we're really talking about here with a recent phishing email. This one is a rather poorly done example, if I may say so, where we have Visa and MasterCard together. That generally doesn't happen very often, and nor if you look at the from there, it's visa@mastercard.com. Again, most common sense people probably wouldn't fall for this, but there are a number of people who do. And it gives you a 1-805 number to confirm your account information. Looking at it, surprisingly, even though the 805 number, which we'll talk about next, this is the same phishing one used with the Santa Barbara Bank and Trust, it happens to be in the Santa Barbara area. So it was probably a reasonable idea that the person chose the 805 number. You'll get to hear the example in a moment. It's actually using a text-to-speech for IVR. The big joke is that it's probably fairly recognized that Eastern European countries are responsible for a lot of fraud in general that affects people in the United States. And so there was a common joke going around, are we going to start hearing, you know, a thick accent on these phishing scams? And in fact, they're using a text-to-speech IVR. It's very computer-generated. It hangs up upon entering your information. If you actually go through and enter the information, it hangs up on you. And the poor quality email, you see down here, we earnestly ask you to call this number. I'm not sure any company has ever earnestly asked me to do anything. Going on to the first voice phishing alert comes from WebSense. It's for the Santa Barbara Bank and Trust. These were the same phone numbers that ended up in two different emails, two different types of things. And let's listen to what it sounded like. Oh, we can. Sorry about that. Can everybody hear that? I can try to get it even closer here.
Welcome to account verification. Please type your 16-digit card number.
It's hard to tell when you go through all these speaker systems, but in fact, it's just a text-to-speech example, and we're going to actually talk about how you can do that and what that looks like. As far as Vishing officially published, the best I can tell again is that it comes from SecurityFix. It was the first article, it was about June 26th, in an article titled Vishing Dialing for Dollars. And from there, I turned my speech in, for any of you who are familiar with how Black Hat works, I turned it in about on the end of June. And for the month of July, it's probably been one of the most published topics in security. Wall Street Journal, a number of other magazines and newspapers publishing articles on this. SMS phishing from AppSecure, they published back in April a similar way to get the message out. And as I'll talk about, we're really focused on the actual platform used to create the phish, not so much in this case and how you get the word out to call your number. This is an SMS text message. Again, from a reasonableness standpoint, if I got a random text message from my bank, I'm not sure that I'd call the number back. But this is definitely an example of what's happening out there. So let's talk about our phishing concept. Again, this is a standard generic phishing email. I'm not particularly picking out one bank here. I took it off of their website as an example of what to avoid. And it goes through here, and the standard protecting the security of your account, and something happened. So you need to call this 800 number to find out, to reinstate your account. So let's go ahead and call the 800 number. Of course, I'm not going to really enter my 16-digit account number, but I will enter.
Please enter your zip code.
I can enter a fake zip code.
For balance and available credit, press 1. For payment information,
so I want my balance information, so I'll press 1. And I actually get a real live person. So the question is, the first thing that comes to mind is how did I do that? And I started off with, and I encourage you to take a credit card out of the back of your wallet. Just about most credit card companies have it, is there's a international callers, please dial area code wherever they happen to be located. And there's no IVR connected to that. It's kind of amazing for all the websites out there that talk about how you can bypass the IVR if you hit 086 times, you hit star, then 6, then Q, you'll get, a live operator. For most credit card companies, you can actually dial their international phone number, and you get connected fairly quickly to a real human being. I would encourage you to go ahead and use that. I haven't spent a lot of time talking to them, but I don't think that they ask you whether you're really calling Collect internationally. They'd be happy to help you. So let's take a look at the workflow and how it works. The user calls the 800 number in the email just like we did. Our phone system answers the call and then asks the caller questions. And our PBX is going to record the call and while we're transferring it to the real operator. So in this case, we're capturing some information through the IVR and we're actually going to record, we're going to do a call hijack and we're going to record that conversation with the operator. So here's the tools. You need a PBX platform, voice over IP 800 number provider, voice over IP outbound number provider so that we can make that transferred call, and a computer to run it on. We start off with Asterisk. You heard a lot about it in this morning's talk. It is an extraordinarily powerful telephone system. When I went back and said, there's nothing really new here, one of the interesting facts is that most of this is coming out of the economics of doing this type of work have changed. To do this maybe 5 years ago, you had to actually go out and buy an Avaya system. You had to buy, some form of commercial telephone system. The fact that there's an open source one available makes this a lot more accessible. If you look on that last paragraph, this is just right off their website, you can do voicemail, call conferencing, interactive voice response, call queuing. We're going to talk about how all of these things can really be put together to create some interesting phishing. Again, TrixBox is kind of the all-in-one toolkit. If you're familiar with Asterix, you're probably saying, oh, why are you going and building such a fat client? But one of the things that I wanted to emphasize today is that really anybody can do this. This is not a very highly technical phishing thing to create. It's actually very simple. With TrixBox, you can actually bring it up in the VMware player. So you can download right off VMware's website. They have a pre-made VMware player, and literally as fast as you can download it off the internet, you can boot up and have this running, and I would honestly say 2 minutes, not including the download time. Again, as we see these scams going and getting more sophisticated, I think what you'll see is that people will break into other people's servers and install a very slimmed-down version of Asterix to run this off of. Again, if you're going to really, my example here is really just to show you the power of the tools, not to show you how to do this as a fisher might do this. And for them to do it, they don't want to get caught, so they're going to want to do it not on your home computer, but on a computer that's not connected back to them. You need a voice over IP provider, 800 number provider. Again, talking about how the economics have changed, a couple of years ago you had to call up one of the big telephone companies, request an 800 number. It took a long period of time. This is, again, I'm not endorsing any of these. I really was looking for an ease of use to get an 800 number. Sixtel, which I believe was recently acquired by another company, but their service hasn't changed, and you can very quickly get an 800 number. In fact, you can get vanity 800 numbers. I looked up all of the ones, this was back a month ago. If you wanted to get something that ended in fish, so you had 98fish as your 800 number, you could do that. For the vanity 800 numbers, you have to wait a little bit longer. If you do one of the ones that you have in your queue, in their queue that they've already pre-purchased, I suppose, you can actually get an 800 number in just a minute or two. Taking a look at the voice over IP providers, again, there are a million voice over IP providers out there. One of the nice things about VoIPjet is that they allow you to modify the caller ID. So as you're transferring callers, you can change the caller ID, so what it appears on the other end is different than actually what you're calling through. And again, going back to the economics of voice over IP, one of the key reasons that this isn't, I don't want to say it's an economical, but that you can actually do this, is look at the prices for the UK and for the US. You're talking about a penny a minute to be transferring phone calls. That's a very, very small dollar amount. If you take a $5, you actually, to go back for a second, you get a free 25 cents. That's actually 25 minutes of calling without even putting down your 25 cents. If you put in $5 into the system, you get almost 500 minutes. You can look at the other countries too. The rates here for voice over IP are extraordinarily low. That's what makes this work. Remember, 5-10 years ago, nobody would invest in this type of telecommunications infrastructure to make back, I don't know how much money. But today, these dollars are all being very, very small. I would imagine that if it cost a penny to mail a letter, including printing out the letter, putting the stamp on it, and getting to the post office, we'd probably see more U.S. mail phishing scams coming up. So let's talk about the basic setup. This is the TrixBox admin screen. I think we saw a little bit of it this morning if you're in this morning's conference. Again, there's a couple pieces that go along with it. TrixBox is really what packages it all together. It comes with Asterix and FreePBX, which is going to be our configuration tool. Let's look at configuring Asterix. This really has nothing to do with phishing per se. It's really just showing you the power of Asterix. If you look down the right-hand side, yeah, I guess my right's your right too when you look at it on the screen. You can see all the different things that you can configure. You can create a conference calling system, dial in and enter your conference number, multiple extensions, follow me, inbound and outbound calling, hold music if you wanted to do hold music, paging and intercom, queuing, ring groups, and time conditions. So while what I'm showing you today is actually going to be a very simplistic diagram of how you can configure this for a phishing scam, you can in fact build a full-fledged call center system that if you wanted to answer yourself, you could queue up callers and slowly answer them. Another idea would be to queue up callers and never answer them. I'm sure a lot of people get fed up anyway with a real bank. They never even bother and they hang up anyway. So there's a lot of things in here that I don't even address that you can use. So a lot of this is going to come down to creativity. So we won't go ahead and get our 800 number at Sixtel. Again, You just go and you pick on the 800 number. This was the random one that I got. I'm sure that you guys are all going to call it. You'll get the demo line that I just called. There's a little warning in front of it just to make sure that people don't mistake it for a real phishing call-in number. Again, you're going to route it to your Asterisk PBX server. AIX is the protocol. We do a lot with SIP. You've heard a lot of hacking SIP and doing things with the SIP protocol. AIX is, I don't want to call it, say it's proprietary, but it's really only available in the Asterisk open source system. You can see that there's really huge economic base built around Asterisk, the fact that there are providers that just do AIX type of voice over IP. So we're going to add a trunk to Asterisk. You put in the top. You see the outbound caller ID at the top. I'm going to mute the other microphone here for a second. The outbound caller ID at the top. This is a very simple way to, sorry about that, a very simple way to configure it. You just enter in the host, the password. Obviously, my password is really not password. And you're going to allow any type of communication. That's all you do to set up the trunk. So the basic monitoring system, this is kind of the poor man's solution. A lot of people call this the man in the middle if we're going to equate it to other types of schemes. Using Asterisk basic monitoring technique, we're going to take a plain old 800 number and we're going to forward it to a real customer service number. You can actually forward this to a full IVR system because you really don't care. You're going to get all of the information when they type it in. You're also going to record the conversation for personal information. It's very manual. I don't know that anybody would really want to do this, but I really wanted to show kind of the man in the middle of. It's a good thing we got another battery for this one. This battery went out before the. Now it'll be harder to hear the sound. It's going to be very manual, but it's also very difficult to detect. There's really nothing. You're just forwarding the information along. If there's a hiccup in the internet, that's probably the only way somebody would detect that you're doing this. So let's take a look at the logical flow again. The user gets an 800 number in the email. Maybe they actually use Asterisk to call somebody up and leave that 800 number on their answering machine. Maybe they SMS text message it. There's a lot of variations on getting the word out to your number. Our PBX is going to answer the call. Our PBX records the call and transfers the call to a real operator. So if you were actually going to use this to get information on people, you'd have to go and listen to what could be 150 WAV files, listening to everything, recording it down. Again, it doesn't really make sense for what people have traditionally used phishing for. What it could be used for is kind of the equivalent of a targeted, if you're just going to go after a very small number of people, you can use a technique like this. So let's talk about creating our monitoring number. This gets into the details of how you configure Asterisk. Again, if you know Asterisk, you can look at this and say, I cheated, and this is the very simplistic way to do it. I really wanted to choose a very simple way to do it. Assuming you have the Trix box installed, you open up the file listed here at the top, the extensions custom.com, and under the DID customs, this is again my 800 number. I set the caller ID. I answer. One of the funny things about Asterisk, it doesn't, when you're dealing with the phone system, you don't always have to answer the phone. So you actually have to tell it to answer the phone. We don't wait here because we're monitoring, but what I'll explain to you later is as a VoIP connection occurs, it actually takes probably 1 to 2 seconds for that connection to occur. I don't know if you heard when I was dialing up on my cell phone calling the 800 number. It took 2 seconds for the voice to start. You really want to make sure that that connection is established before you start sending a message. We're just going to monitor here. We're going to do it in the WAV format. I called it black hat dash whatever the timestamp is, and then we're going to go ahead and dial an 800 number and record that 800 number. So let's take a look at monitoring the call, and I apologize. You know, when I originally did this, I'm sure the people in the middle are worst off here on reading through this. But if we look at the top couple lines here and follow my mouse back, we're going to answer the call. And it says here, call accepted. This is the 800 number we dialed. The format of the call is GSM. If you're familiar with voice over IP, this is going to be in the GSM format. We're passing it on to Sixtel. Sixtel is going to answer the call, and we've gone through and we're recording it. If you go through here, it finally says hang up. We recorded Black Hat 010101. I kind of made it up. Interesting, down here at the bottom, you'll see the very last line. It's executing Sox Mix. When you were listening, if you were in the morning session, one of the interesting things about what they did was, is there's two pieces to each phone call. You have the caller side and your side to the phone call. And you have to mix those back together. In the morning session, they were only showing you one side. They weren't mixing them together. One of the nice things about Asterisk is it wants to make it user-friendly, and it doesn't want to give you two different WAV files that you'd have to listen to. If you wanted to, you could tell it not to mix it back together. But what it's going to do at the end is actually mix the two together so you get both calls in the same WAV file. Still a poor man's solution. This is really what we've seen before. And let's go ahead and listen to it one more time so you can picture what they're doing, and then listen to what, see how we've configured it.
Welcome to account verification. Please type your 16-digit card number.
So I did an okay job here of trying to mimic that. Again, we're going to answer the phone. We should be waiting. I don't wait here. And Festival is the text-to-speech program that's built into Asterisk. Again, very simple. You give it text, it's going to repeat back to you. There's a lot of different voices you can use. There's European versions. There's a couple other man, woman that you can choose from. Very familiar if you have navigation systems and they have the generic voice. It's just standard text-to-speech. Whatever you type in here, it's going to repeat back. You can do very custom things with it. Again, what we're doing, if you look at down to here, we're calling the Festival application in parentheses. We're telling it exactly what we want Festival to say. In this case, welcome to the bank. Please enter your credit card number. Read CC. Read is a variable that's going to tell us what it's going to expect an answer from the user. We're going to go into this further. In this case, I'm just asking for any type of input it's going to look for. And again, we're moving on here. Festival, after it reads your credit card number, it's going to go ahead and say, please enter your zip code, please enter your social security number, please enter your CVV2 information. You can basically put anything you want in here. It makes it very powerful from a creativity standpoint. But is it really believable to have some computer-generated voice going back? And again, listen to what was done in the original one. And it's not, you can go on the web and listen to it, it's not very quality sounding, and there's no statistics on it as of yet. This is obviously very new to see whether people actually believe this type of voice solution. So let's build on the concept. Using our new monitoring 800 number, we're going to record the conversations with a real IVR system and use those to build our own IVR using the same voices. So let's look at the workflow. A user calls the 800 number in an email. Our PBX is going to answer it. We're going to actually record the caller ID information. We'll talk about all the information you can get from caller ID in a little bit as well. Then our PBX asks for a credit card number. You enter in the credit card number. Our PBX asks for a zip code. You enter in the zip code. That's all going to be stored. And then we're going to also store the recording of the real operator. So let's see what finding our voice is. I called a random bank to get these voices. You really can call any bank and chop these up as you wish. The interesting thing on the first one is listen to the very first part of it and then think about what the actual phishing phone call was that I played at the very beginning. If you remember, in the first, when I very first did that call, it was actually the 16 digits. What was really odd about this is I called from a cell phone that shouldn't be connected to any bank account. So for some odd reason, that phone number probably being reused from somebody else's account that they never updated, it thought I was a customer of the bank and it was only asking me for the last four digits. We're going to talk about using that to be helpful, but it hurt me. I had to go back and call and block my caller ID to make sure that I got the full 16 digits. So that's when I went back and I did the redo.
Welcome to Credit Card Services. Please enter your full 16-digit account number.
And I went ahead and did that. You can go ahead and do this with any IVR system. It's not going to be limited to banks. It's not going to be limited to anything, really. It's your own creativity. I'm sure what people are going to do is take somebody who has a lot of custom prompts in it and chop it up and get just tiny little bits of words in there that they're going to play back to you. In this case, I had a tough time finding somebody who'd ask me for my social security number. That's absolutely great. That's why I went with zip code. So if some of you are going, well, this is stupid, all you get is my credit card number, my zip code, you definitely have a point. I couldn't find an IVR. I did a little bit of testing, but I couldn't find one that was going to ask me for my social security number, even the last four digits of my social security number. If you've ever, again, what I tried to do is show how the only cost here would be a couple dollars for your voice over IP time. So I actually went with a free software to do the editing. Audacity is a great editing program. You go in and you chop up the voice files. Each one you make into its own separate file. And in this case, this is the full menu system that I'm going to break up. I shouldn't have to tell you this, but Windows doesn't follow the standard WAV format. So when you're doing this, one of the things that you'll run into is that if you just take off of Audacity and you put it on your asterisk box, which is Linux, it doesn't work. It'll just keep hanging up on you saying, error in the file, error in the file. And that's because Windows is not compliant with the WAV format. So SOX is a Linux tool, extraordinarily powerful. You can do a million different things with it. In this case, we're going to convert our Windows WAV file to a Linux WAV file. In this case, we're actually going to convert it to a GSM file, GSM being the smallest and taking the least amount of processor time. When you start to work heavily in asterisks and you're doing it in real life and trying to build real call centers with it, the GSM format's actually a very low processor, low bandwidth format to use. And if you look here, if you're familiar with MP3s that are done at like 128K, the files that we're using to do over the phone are only 8K. That's where the R8000 comes from, is you're actually setting these at 8K files. So if you think about your music, if you wanted to import old music on here and you pulled off your favorite music CD, not that that's you can't do that, that's a copyright violation. But as an example, if you wanted to take maybe some homemade music that you did and convert it through here, you'd actually downgrade it from your 128, your 192K file down to an 8K file. So you understand the quality that you're getting in these files. That also goes to the fact that what we'll probably see here is a lot of very bad audio files. As you downgrade all this stuff over and over again, you're going to get some bad audio files. You move it into the sound directory, varlib asterisk sounds, that's where all the sound files and asterisks go. This is actually how you build the menu, and we're going to walk through everything. Again, it's a good lesson in learning what asterisks is like, but at the same time, it's also going to show you exactly how this works. And again, this is really how an Avaya or a Cisco IVR would work. We're just doing it in an open source text-based PBX system. We create what's called custom-fish. That's going to be our application. Again, we have to answer the phone. It seems kind of stupid, but if you go do this and you forget to answer the phone, a lot of times the caller will keep here ringing. It's playing music to nobody, but all the caller hears is ringing. We're going to set our caller ID to make sure that the person calling is when we go ahead and dial out, that that's the phone number that they get. So my cell phone number would get set in there to be passed along. Our timeout digit, these are both the space in between and how much time to wait for you to enter numbers. So if you just call up and you don't type anything in, we can actually tell Asterisk, well, it's timed out. Let's go ahead and pass on a different piece of information. Say, for example, you wanted to make sure that no matter what, you'd get somebody transferred into an operator to record them. You can actually build all kinds of timeouts. If they don't enter in the credit card information correctly, you can immediately transfer them to an operator. Again, much like you do in a real PBX system, you can actually do an asterisk. Here's our waiting 2 seconds. This is to make sure that the line has actually come up. To do all these sets beforehand, they happen extraordinarily quickly. We really want to make sure that the line comes up. That's a number in general you'll want to tweak. For me, 2 worked best. You can probably get it down to 1, but you'll start getting some weird things. When I broke it up in that last slide where we were talking about Audacity and changing all the WAV files, I saved each of these WAV files to something called well-2-ccc-services. That was something that I'd easily be able to remember. So we're going to read in a variable called cc right here. We're going to play the file well2ccc-services, and we're asking for 16 digits. And again, if we were just going to play the file to them and wait, that's not realistic. Most callers know that you should start typing numbers the minute they hit. And by doing this, Asterisk actually knows how to do that. If you started typing before the audio took place, like in our example, when I hit one, menu option number 1 really quickly, it immediately went ahead and transferred us. That's what we're doing here. It'll transfer you. It's waiting for 16 digits. If you enter in 15, it's going to keep waiting until it times out, our timeout variable here. But it's looking for 16 digits. We're going to wait a second just to make sure that as you type each of the digits and you hear the beep on your phone, that you'll be able to hear the next message, and that's zip code. Our variable is zip. That's what we're storing it in, and our sound file is called zip code, and we're looking for 5 digits. Again, you know, add to your creativity. You can really do anything you want here. You create a sound file, you create a variable, you're asking for a certain number of digits. Again, we're going to wait a second. We want to make sure that everything is calmed down with the DTMF or whatever you're doing. And we're going to read in credit card menu. Again, this could be bizarre, anything you want. The voice file, CC menu, and the number of characters we're looking for is 1 character. No matter what you hit, we're going to send you somewhere. If you install TrixBox, it comes with SuperCaller ID, which is a really cool application in general if you're not doing anything with asterisks and you just want to look up phone numbers instantaneously. It goes to Google, anywho.com, as well as bellsmind.net. If you've ever been to Bell's Mind, they have an area code and exchange lookup. So not only are you going to get the information back on what comes out of their caller ID information, the name, you're going to be able to look that name up, get their address, and you can also find out if it's a cell phone where you're not going to get the name and address, you'll find out the cell phone provider and possibly where they are in the country. This is where we're going to store all that information. The next line here, we're going to echo. Again, real simple stuff if you're probably for anybody, but for a Unix guy. We're going to put our zip code into the file, put all that information into our file, and store it into credit card-info. And that variable right here, that's going to, our file name is actually going to be the credit card number that was entered in. So if we're going through and we're trying to find something, they're all going to be stored by the credit card number. We're going to play them back a little message that says, please wait to connect call. Very standard when you hit menu option. The only thing that could be confusing is if they're looking for balance information, they're really expecting the bank never to want to transfer them to a real operator. It might be a surprise that they're going to get an operator in this example so quickly. This should look familiar. This next line, the monitor line, we're going to store it as a WAV file. We're going to store it. The name of the WAV file will be the credit card number you entered. And then we're going to go ahead and forward it to one of the phone numbers we found on the international numbers we found on the back of the credit card. Let's take a look at building the menu. Again, we're going back to our asterisk TrixBox application. We go to inbound routes, and we create a route for our 800 number. The DID number, 800-927-7416. And down here at the bottom, we created a custom application. Custom-fish, S is to start with number 1. Or it's actually like a generic variable. And we're going to start with the first line. You can actually jump in and start anywhere you want in a menu. So let's look at what happens when we actually make the call. And this might as well have been the call that I did when we did it, but just because I didn't want any of our examples to fail, I wanted to make sure we had all of these presets, so I wasn't looking it in. These first couple lines are just going through the standard, we have a strange call, I wonder where we send it. We're going to send it to custom fish. S1, we just saw that. Executing our custom fish, we answer the call. We're setting our timeout digit to 4. We're setting our response timeout digit to 30 seconds. And we are going to send, we're waiting 2 seconds. Then we are going to send, welcome to credit card services, and we're going to accept a maximum of 16 digits. And we go ahead and play that sound file back to the user. So that user gets to play the sound file, you hear it. Then the user enters. Shockingly, when I did the example, I didn't even enter in a fake credit card number. I entered in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, etc., 16 digits. And if you do the example and really call the 800 number, I'd highly recommend you enter in fake digits. We're going to wait a second. We're going to then go ahead and read our variables for zip code. Again, zip is the variable, zip code is the sound file. We're going to look for 5 digits, accepting a maximum of 5 digits, and we go ahead and play that sound file back to them. The user entered 54321. Shocking that they didn't enter in a real zip code, although I'd bet that 54321 is a real zip code for somewhere. We're going to wait 1 more second, and we're going to go ahead and execute our read command for the credit card menu, only looking for 1 variable, accepting maximum of 1 digits. We play it. The user entered 2. In this case, we actually skipped over an entire menu tree. If you're really doing this in real life and you wanted to provide a wealth of services to your caller, you'd say, well, the user entered 2, let's go and move them over to this application. In this case, I didn't care what the user entered. Every single option there was going to send them to an operator. I'm sure it was shocking for the end user, oh my God, I got an operator, this is great. I talked to them. In this case, we're logging all this information, the credit card number, the zip code, and then we go ahead and look at, it's going to start recording that, and we're recording the call, we accept the call continues, and then we finish up the call, and again, at the very end, we merge the two sound files back together so we get a unified sound file. It's actually nice here at the end with all the debug information. You get the caller ID information back in this one spot. The two parties we used to make the call, in this case, Sixtel and VoIPjet, we monitored it. That was the monitoring. This is the time that the calls actually took place. In this case, it was back in June when I was making a PowerPoint presentation. We answered the call, and we took down some documentation. So let's talk about what you can do further. This is obviously a very standard example that I created. I don't check for what it's called LUN, L-H-U-N, which checks to see if the credit card number is actually a valid credit card number. I don't do that. You could do that. It would. I don't know if that's something that phishing people would want to do, but it's definitely an option. The power of Asterisk allows you to build anything in Perl, JavaScript, Java, a whole bunch of other applications. So if you know how to code it, you can go ahead and build any type of application. Using the caller ID information, you can actually call the user back to confirm their change. This is kind of the reverse of calling the user and giving them an 800 number to call. If they're dumb enough to call into the system, you can call them back, say, in the afternoon to say, we got your information, your call has been processed, thank you for calling. Kind of gives them the encouragement that they've done something right when, in fact, they've done something quite wrong. The outbound call to have the user call you back at the 800 number, we've seen this a lot. There was actually a telecom company in the news last week where they were getting a ton of people calling out to customers asking them to provide information about their company account. So this is definitely what I've kind of explained here is kind of the base. And from here, we're going to see a variety of techniques and creativity. And again, as fast as these will come out and people get used to them, I'm sure people will create new and interesting ways to get around it. You know, I think that we tend to focus on banking industry when we talk about phishing. Obviously, that's a place where a lot of the money is located. But at the same time, when you talk about a new and different type of platform, we feel that there's definitely some high-risk applications here outside of the general banking system. Credit cards and banking are the number one that we'll see in this area, but we also think the student loan systems, corporate help desks, and utilities with power cable and phone. Most of the utility industry is not incredibly internet savvy. You don't have, you know, the online bill pays you get with a power company are usually through a third-party provider. It would probably shock somebody to get an email that says, come to this website and give us information about your utility. But they are heavily into IVR. So to see a utility on here is actually probably going to be more likely going down the path than, say, a banking application. These definitely are going to be out-of-the-box techniques. So the important part here, preventing PBX phishing. We came up with a couple ideas, and I can't take credit for all of these. A lot of people came into determining what the options were to help preventing PBX phishing. First and foremost is developing a process to deal with a rogue 800 number when you find it. Shutting 800 numbers down, if you're not familiar with it, it could be a foreign process to you trying to get a hold of your carrier, who will then have to go to another carrier to prove that there's something fraudulent going on. If you are in the United States, you have a relationship with the United States Secret Service and their Electronic Crimes Task Force. That's actually a good resource, as well as the FBI InfraGuard. I'm sure there are a number of others out there in the U.S. as well as all around the world. They can be a valuable resource in getting this pushed through. It's not going to be likely that you can just call somebody up like we do these days with websites and have them taken down very quickly. We'll get to that stage, but we're really nowhere near there today. The other interesting thing that a lot of people wouldn't do in the web world that you'd consider doing in the telephone world is actually telling the user, redirect that 800 number to your voicemail and tell them they're an idiot. You know, the number you've called is actually a scam. You really should think about that and not call 800 numbers that are presented to you in emails. You know, we talk a lot about this is all social engineering. The only way that this works is because social engineering is still effective in the United States. And we haven't done a very good job in getting people to change their habits as far as the web goes. And I attribute a lot of that to because the web is still new if you look at the broad spectrum of the past 100 years of telecommunications.
this may well be a very poor way to get information from people. This is still relatively new. It may turn out that people are smart enough to understand not to be calling these 800 numbers. It's possible. But we really need to do something to actually point out to people that they've called the wrong number. I don't know if you've heard the statistic. If you go to Netcraft, they have a toolbar. I believe it's now just included in Firefox, where it'll tell you that you are at a phishing site. Beware. Don't enter your information here. They did some research, and it turns out that people still entered their information in there, even after being warned that it was possibly fraudulent. They said, you know what, I'd rather give them my information so that they could stop the fraud, and it was worth doing it. And in fact, they went ahead and entered their information through a phishing scam. So I actually think that this could be a really good idea. You call up the 800 number, and it tells you pretty plain and simply, you're an idiot. Recommend users only call the 800 number on the back of their card. It is amazing to me how many 800 numbers my bank has and every bank has, whether it's because you're calling them to respond to an ad or to a specific product or to a million other things. And one of the things that I think we will see is when an 800 number gets sent out in an email, and that email gets forwarded to information security, corporate communications, maybe even to the call center, it may take them a long time to track down if they even own that 800 number or if, in fact, this is a scam. So first, I would recommend that banks slim down the number of 800 numbers that they use and recommend that users only call 800 numbers on the back of their card, the ones that are provided in their billing information. They should also have an inventory of all their phone numbers. If one of these incidences come up, they'd better be able to very quickly be able to identify if it's theirs and if it's not. On the reverse, I'm sure that we all see, we were joking the other day, that a lot of real banks do such a bad job that it looks like it could be a phishing scam. So that gets forwarded to the corporate communications department. They go ahead and turn off a real 800 number of theirs because it actually looked like it could be a phishing scam. Warn users today. I was actually surprised, and again, I'm not bashing Santa Barbara Bank and Trust. I went to their website expecting to see something talking about the fact that they were handing out an 800 number. They talked about the general phishing information. It was helpful, but it didn't specifically say, do not call 800 numbers that you receive in emails. This should be standard practice. Everybody should update their standard phishing literature that they send out. It's not just websites that you need to be concerned with. It's 800 numbers, and it should also not simply talk about getting them in emails. It should talk about getting them anywhere where you wouldn't necessarily expect it, SMS, emails, on the back of the bathroom, wherever you're going. Monitoring users, Annie. ANI is actually what is sent by the telephone company versus what caller ID information is. Caller ID might as well be, to do a comparison, if you're not familiar with telecommunications, ANI would be the IP address, and caller ID would be the DNS information. You can easily change the DNS information. It could link to 100 different things. As I'll say here, you can spoof the ANI. I think there was a presentation last year that talked about it. While it can be spoofed, it's much harder to spoof. I'm not saying that you should ever use caller ID information to be authenticating people, but it's a better number to look at. You should never use caller ID or ANI to actually authenticate the user. It's good on one half to ask for the last four digits of my credit card number, but you shouldn't be relying upon that caller ID information to be making any type of decision on a user. Additionally, you need to train call center reps on phishing. Ask callers what 800 number they dialed. When you call into the IVR system, instead of simply forwarding through, say you've reached bank X at this 800 number and you're calling from this telephone number. It can be very helpful to make sure that those two pieces link up, and if you're actually trying to do a man-in-the-middle attack, it won't necessarily make sense. And always say the name of the bank. If you go ahead and you do some research and you call a whole bunch of IVRs, you will see a lot of instances where they never actually say the bank name. And I understand with a number of branding products out there where one bank does 86 different banks, you don't necessarily want to say the name of the bank. It's cheaper to have 1-800 number handles multiple clients. But not saying the name of the bank opens you up to an even broader type of phishing attack. Prevent crossover knowledge. This is actually goes back to the FFIEC guidance, which says you have to look at both what information you provide on your website once you log in, and it also talks about what information you have on your IVR as well that you have to look at. Looking at that crossover information, never ask for CVV2 information in an IVR. It just doesn't make sense. People should not be typing that in or keying that in. Never ask for the full Social Security number. Again, this is not something that you should ever be asking. If you're going to ask for the last four, that makes sense, but you shouldn't ask for the full Social Security number. Also go through and evaluate the information available when you successfully log into the IVR. What I'm talking about here is when you log in and you have your menu system, what are the menu options that are available? What information are you actually playing back to the user? Can you find out what their address is and their billing information is? Can you find out what the name, I mean, you can do check number 123 for $26, that's pretty innocuous. But we've gotten to the point where you can provide a wealth of information back to the user. Oh, the check was actually to your utility for this amount of money and it cleared on this date. And you can get a lot more information out of it. So evaluate what you're presenting back to the user. That is my presentation. I came up a little bit early, which gives me a lot of time for questions. So if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. It was actually hard to find a full-service provider that could do an 800 number, that could do the caller ID spoofing, that could do all those functionality. VoIPJet, I kind of picked best of breed. VoIPJet's great at outbound. They don't even have an inbound service. They let you spoof the caller ID. Sixtel, very easy to get VID numbers and 800 numbers. So I did that assuming that you'd want to move through this process in hours, not in days. You know, it really comes down to PayPal. A good majority of all of the voice over IP service providers are using PayPal. So if you can set up an anonymous account in PayPal and pay that bill, you can get the account information on those providers. I know VoIPJet recently went and said you had to use a verified account, because I believe that I'm totally speculating, but based upon that email going out, I'd be surprised if they're not getting some fraudulent transactions in there. So they are trying to reduce that, but you're really relying upon PayPal to regulate who is a verified user and transferring that money. If there are no other questions, oh, sorry, I heard a name back there, but I see a hand over there. You know, most of them have actually started to change how they're handling that. If you call some of the international numbers, they're changing the front ends of those to make sure that they're a little bit more accurate so this type of information comes through. Most banks are actually well aware of these types of issues. They're really trying to get ahead of the curve. Some of them were ahead of the curve on the standard phishing emails, and they're really trying to be more proactive in getting ahead of the curve on this type of attack. I believe that's actually why there's been so much publicity versus so few incidences, is because everybody really is trying to get ahead of the curve on this versus falling behind and having to react in a not as smooth manner. So I heard my way over there. That was actually, I used the example, was off of Chase's website that had examples of phishing emails, and I changed where it had a bad link to my phone number. So I modified something that they provided. Well, I appreciate the time. I will be up here if you don't want to ask a question in front of everybody else. Thank you very much.